From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Doomsday Theories. Here's what's happening. Well, a poll out there says that most Americans say the government shutdown is causing a crisis or major problems for the country. And while an international survey also indicates that slightly more people are angry at Republicans than Democrats or President Barack Obama for the shutdown, it's pretty clear that both sides are taking a hit. And China jumping in now, the biggest foreign creditor of the United States, they say that, look, according to this crisis, we are warning Congress that it must resolve the political impasse over the debt ceiling without further delay. The Chinese Vice Foreign Minister told America's deadlocked politicians that the clock is ticking and called on them to approve an extension of the national borrowing limit before the federal government is projected to simply run out of cash on October 17th. Catherine Austin Fitz, president of Solari.com, she's with us now. Catherine, first of all, if China threatens us like this, what does that mean? I mean, we go into default. What are they going to do, own the country?
I don't think they're really threatening. I do think it's unnerving for the creditors. Now, the president would have to, the president has the authority to sign the bill, to pay the debt, to roll it. You know, in other words, Congress has given him all the authority he needs for both the debt and expenditures, George. So if the president, for the president to default, he has to say, you know, I would rather default on the creditors than not get immediate funding for health care, when he, in fact, has delayed the application of the health care bill to small business. So it's inconceivable to me that the President of the United States would do that. But I think it's very hard for people around the world to understand what's going on and why. You know, it looks to them like the whole thing isn't under adult supervision.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, it is. It's crazy. It sounds irresponsible to me. There are some out there, Catherine, saying that if this continues, the hit could be worse than what happened in 2008, which we cannot afford to do.
Well, except for this, George, I do believe that fundamental issues of freedom are more important than money. And in fact, you know, one of the great things that happened during 2008 was when Congress first said no to the bailouts. There was about 24 to 48 hours where everybody in America kind of said, phew, because they understood, you know, with no law, nothing has any value. And I think, you know, what's at heart here is some pretty fundamental issues of basic freedoms and basic law, which is why, for one, you know, my congresswoman is one of the ones who is helping to lead the charge. And she has my full support on this. So I think Obamacare is going to be very devastating for the economy. It's going to be very devastating for small business. And the administration sort of opened the window and the door politically when they delayed for part of the group and not the whole group. So it's perfectly reasonable to me that Congress would say. But I would recommend, I have a wonderful article up on my blog called Coming Clean Over the Fiscal Cliff, and it describes the 22 structural sort of systemic reasons why it's so hard for Congress to reconcile these different issues, because the American people have not reconciled these issues. And if you look at the latest polls, there's a remarkable, you know, it's a slim majority that does not view the Affordable Health Care Act favorably. And, you know, so there's wide dissension. And if you look at the Republicans who are sort of leading the charge on not appropriating for the authorized or the bill that's been authorized, you know, their constituents are sort of angry at them for not being tougher.
And Catherine, to the man or woman who's listening to you right now on the program, and they don't feel as if the shutdown has affected them at all, what do you say to them?
Well, what I say to them is that whenever you have uncertainty in the governance system, it's bad for the economy. But it's not as bad for the economy as having a huge federal budget which is not in compliance with the Constitution and the laws related to financial management and has a negative return on investment to taxpayers. So our federal budget is extremely, the way it's organized, is extremely harmful for the economy. And I think that's part of what this squabble is about, because in no place do you see the harm greater than in the health and health-related rules, regulations, laws, and spending.
Okay, Catherine, thank you so much. By the way, over at our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the new $100 bill, which will make its said debut on Tuesday. The bill was originally due to reach the banks in 2011, but 3 years ago, the Federal Reserve announced that a problem with the currency's new security measures was causing the bills to crease during printing, which left blank spaces on the bills. So go take a look at what they're going to look like. Comet Ison is brightening as it approaches the sun. Estimates by experienced observers put the comet between the 10th and 11th magnitude. That's still a little too dim to see with the unaided eye. Let's check in with Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky, on this one. Some say it's going to disintegrate right before it gets there. Stephen, what do you think?
Good morning and good evening. Yes, to all the coast listeners, I'm hoping, of course, like you and I, that that doesn't happen. But I'm hoping that there's going to be some life in this comet yet. You're right. As sky watchers look into the morning sky now, about 5 a.m. local time, get your sky watching coordinates ready to go. Look and you'll see the planet Mars in the east, about 20 degrees high. What you want to do with a pair of binoculars is scan that area, George, under dark conditions. The moon is not going to interfere for a while. But the comet, as we hear the numbers, plus 10 to plus 11, is indeed fairly faint at this time. But I'm predicting this. I think as the comet passes Mars, as it's doing right now, there hopefully is some life into this nucleus. Remember, it's a young comet, probably the first time it's passed into the sun, into the solar area. And I think, really, truly, this comet may still have another surprise for us. And even still, George, there's still many months away before its close encounter to the sun. And I want to mention one more time, too, George, real quickly, other events happening right now. We're going through the throes of the Draconid meteor shower. So if coast listeners are looking into the west and into the north all night, they may be seeing some slow fireballs from another extinct comet. This one, of course, known as the Draconids. And as people say, astronomers say this, and I think it's kind of comical about comets and their unpredictability. Comets are like cats. And generally, they have tails, and guess what? They basically do what they want. So.
You got it. That's what a cat does. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, so we think that a lot of people check their phones all the time. Right now, we have some proof. Locket, which is an Android app that pays users in exchange for placing ads on their lock screens, has compiled data on its 150,000-plus users. And guess what? They're constantly locking and unlocking their phones, and in some cases, individual users unlock their phones, get this, up to 900 times a day. They should just keep it unlocked. Anyway, in a moment, we're going to check in with Howard Bloom. We're going to talk about just about everything going on this planet next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Howard Bloom, of course, the founder of the International Paleopsychology Project and the Big Bang Tango Media Lab. And I turned to him just to get his advice on so many things that have been happening on this planet. We're going to talk with him about a number of issues, including, of course, people opening up their smartphones, some of them up to 900 times. The average is 110 times a day. Howard, that's pretty excessive, isn't it?
Well, it sounds excessive, but there's actually several sources of information on this, and one just came out today, or came out actually 7 days ago. It was a Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers report. And it showed that people are checking their phones 150 times a day. That really does sound excessive. Remember, there's a difference in psychology between use and abuse. Use is when you're keyed into something and are able to make positive use of it. And abuse is when it sucks you in, is when it carries you backwards. And sometimes it's very hard to tell the difference with the cell phone. But the fact is, most people are checking their phones 23 times a day for messaging. That's inevitable. If people are going to message you, you have to be aware of what they're saying. They're doing it 22 times a day for voice calls. That's inevitable. That's what phones are for. And they're doing it 18 times a day to get the time. So the amount that they're doing for out of sheer obsessiveness is lower than you might think. And the other thing is, you know, people accuse us in America and the West of being consumerists and materialists and all kinds of vile things. The fact is, we don't buy most of the things that we buy in order to own an extra batch of plastic and pound of chrome. When we buy a cell phone, we're not into it for getting 7 extra ounces of silicon and plastic. We buy it because it's a pipeline to the human spirit. It's a pipeline to our fellow human beings. It's a pipeline of connectivity. It's a pipeline of insight. It's a pipeline of delight. It's a pipeline of warmth. And those are the things that keep us alive as human beings. There's a book I'm working on, which probably won't be out for 2 years. I'm just at the very beginning stages. And in it is the concept of the GAL and the GAS. The GAL is like the gross domestic product, except it's the gross amount of living going on the planet, which has been increasing dramatically since 3.85 billion years ago when life began. The gross amount of the GAS is the gross amount of spirit. And when people come alive with cell phones and are able to communicate with each other in brand new ways, the gross amount of spirit, human spirit, that's alive and vibrant at any moment goes way, way up on this planet.
I mean, it's got its pluses and minuses. There's no doubt. I mean, one of the minuses, I mean, I've seen couples, a couple of four, for example, two guys and two gals go to dinner. Not one of them talked to themselves, to each other, Howard, all night. They all had their phones with them, and they were all texting away at somebody.
Well, there's where the difference between use and abuse comes in, and there's where an old-fashioned thing called politeness comes in. Politeness manages to get us to regulate our behavior so we pay appropriate attention to each other. And the ultimate form of connection that keeps us alive, remember, connection keeps us alive. People who feel disconnected begin to die. They get sick, their immune system goes into an overdrive or underdrive. And the primary human connection, the most important human connection, is the face-to-face connection. And that's something that has to be instituted in our rituals. And those rituals are called things like politeness.
Howard, I want to talk with you about what's been going on in Washington as it affects all of us, because I just have a feeling unless these people get their act together, something major is going to happen economically. We can't afford to do that. It's also embarrassing worldwide to see this great nation.
Well, you saw the results today because the stock market went down below 15,000.
Yep.
It had been up in the 15,500 range. And there are a lot of people who have been writing blog posts and op-eds saying, let the economy fall. Let us default on our debt. It's not going to do us any harm. And they don't look at the historical evidence. Remember, we did this in 1997. We came close to defaulting on our debt. We shut down the economy, we shut down at least the government. And the result was dramatic falls in stock prices. In the short term, 380 points, which is a lot of points. Newt Gingrich utterly lost his political credibility. He was a major force in the 1990s until he brought the government to a stop. What's worse is, and you know this, rocking the boat rocks the boat not just here but all over the planet. Now, Asian stocks for tomorrow, for Tuesday, are looking pretty good, but that's not going to last. And it's not just China who owns a big chunk of our debt. China owns $1.3 trillion of our debt, but the Japanese own even more. And the miracle of America is that we have such stability that when the Japanese, the Chinese, the Germans, the Poles want to invest their spare money someplace, they invest it here because it's safer here than any place else on the planet. But if our politicians are rocking the boat so badly that they threaten to capsize it, no matter what the inherent strength of our nation, then they could do away with that in a minute. And if they do, the Chinese have been ready to jump in for a long time and take over all the marbles and become the foundation of security in the world. But we need to be that. I mean, for God's sakes, we stand for freedom of speech. We stand for freedom of expression. We may have our different definitions of what liberty is, but we certainly stand for it. And we stand for even the ability to discuss these things and squabble about them if necessary, which you can't do in China. And those are primary, fundamental structural rights. They do a great deal for what it means to be human, and to allow everything to move to China, to allow China to be the only sane civilization on the face of the planet, with us losing our minds, would be a shame.
Does the person at home, I call them the middle class, whoever they may be now, who knows where they are? They're not affected yet by this, but they will be, won't they?
It reminds me of Katrina. We all were told by all of the broadcasters on television that Katrina was coming, that it was going to be devastating. But if we looked out the window, the weather was calm and clear, the sun was shining, And if you saw any of the pictures from the Gulf area, the Gulf of Mexico area, everything was calm, clear, and gorgeous. It was very hard to believe that something could be coming that could do any damage. And then suddenly, New Orleans was almost gone. That could happen, and it could easily happen with this.
Yeah, it sure could. Well, let's hope they fix it. They're going to have to budge, and that's why I don't understand. They just seem like they're not even really trying to get this done.
Well, it depends. You know, the Republicans feel that the Democrats are not even budging. The Democrats feel the Republicans aren't even budging. But, you know, there's an easy solution. Pass a continuing resolution that lasts more than just 6 weeks. That will at least keep the government going. Increase the debt limit. That's what was done under Republican presidents over and over again, and there was never this kind of desperate fight. You know, put the hat on the baby that I like or I'll shoot the baby. That did not happen until Newt Gingrich invented this particular ploy back in 1997. Mm-hmm. It's time to stop threatening to shoot the baby. That's a little bit extreme. And it's also time to simply pass a clean bill that funds the government and then debate the question of Obamacare, about which there are, you know, a lot of debates. But debate that on its own
merits. Absolutely. You looked at a story, by the way, about body language of the rich and famous, and that they don't care about other people. Tell me about that.
Well, the big trick to that is, this is Daniel Goleman speaking, and Daniel Goleman is a really eminent psychologist. He used to write on a regular basis for the New York Times. He's the one who came up with the idea of emotional intelligence, which has been a powerful concept over the course of the last 20 years. And Daniel Goleman says that when two people are speaking, the one of higher stature, the one of higher power, tends to turn his back toward the others. His eyes wander. He doesn't really pay a lot of attention to the other person. And the person who's on the bottom of the hierarchical ladder is all over the person who's above him, paying exquisite attention to him. And Daniel Goleman says that this lack of attention to the person below you represents a lack of empathy. Now, let's look at that for a minute. This tendency of the individual on the top to look away goes all the way back to chimpanzees. Chimpanzees do it too. It's called an attention structure. And it means that those lower on the totem pole pay exquisite attention to those on top because they follow their lead.
Mm-hmm.
And those on top maintain their position of being on top in part by showing that they don't have to look to anybody else for guidance. They are leaders. But what Goleman points out is that this old chimpanzee tendency is developing a problem in modern American society. Because today, he points out that with all the gerrymandering that has separated Republicans from Democrats, that gerrymandering means that a Republican representative no longer has to pay any attention to Democrats because he doesn't have to worry about courting their vote. And a Democrat who's in a gerrymandered district can do the same. He doesn't have to worry about making compromises with Republicans because he relies on a solely Democratic electorate. And this is separating the Democrats from the Republicans. Then there's the big income gap that's developing.
Huge.
Between the middle class and the super rich. And that's separating the super rich so that they never have to know anybody in the middle class. And when you don't know somebody, says Daniel, who's across the divide from you, you don't care about them anymore. You lose the compassion factor.
Did they even have compassion in the first place, Howard?
Well, yes. Once upon a time in England, the aristocracy was raised to believe that it had a profound obligation to the lower, and in those days there weren't much middle classes, but to the other classes. Now, in reality, they were so self-centered that most of the time it was hard to see the extent to which they might be functioning on behalf of the public interest. But there are people who in the upper class who are seriously interested in the public interest. Look at the Kennedys, whose father, Joseph Kennedy, made a lot of mistakes, but taught his kids that your life should be laid on the line on behalf of your fellow human beings. Look what the Kennedys did. They worked very hard on behalf of civil rights. There have been some quibbles about that, but on the whole, they did.
Yeah.
They worked very hard on behalf of the poor and the downtrodden. So there has been compassion across these huge divides in the past. But the compassion factor seems to be drying up, and there's a subtle philosophy that's been invading America that says freedom is about squabbling between individuals. It's about competing between individuals, that America's creativity comes from the competition between individuals, and that it's a ruthless competition.
Hold on, Howard. We're going to come back, talk more about this. We'll take some calls with you, too. We're talking with Howard Bloom about just about everything. Well, for you Coast Insiders, Tuesday, 8 p.m. Pacific time, we will have our chat, so make sure you jump on board. That room fills up awfully fast, but it's a fun way just to get some more inside information on Coast to Coast with the questions that you fire away to our webmaster, Lex, and he sends them on my way. So it's a fun little hour that we have. Welcome back with Howard Bloom. We'll take your phone calls as well. Howard, you keep your thumb on the pulse of things beyond everything that's been going on with the economy and the wars and all this stuff. How do you feel generally about people being uplifted and getting through their day-to-day activities in a very positive way?
Well, we go back to the cell phone and the fact that people are taking over 100 calls a day, 150 calls a day. Connection between humans lifts them tremendously, and a sense of control over their own fate lifts them tremendously. Having devices like a cell phone, devices like an automobile, these give us a sense of control over our own destiny. But we humans have to recognize that life is based on a balance of opposites. Opposites are generally joined at the hip. So if we take things to an extreme of opposition to each other instead of working together with each other, an extreme of believing that either all government is going to solve our problems or all individual liberty is going to solve our problems, we make big mistakes. We forget that, for example, we humans have demonstrated, we Americans have demonstrated incredible ingenuity over the course of the last 15 years. We've created entirely new industries of a kind that no one ever imagined before. Google as a search engine is something nobody imagined 20 years ago. Facebook is something nobody imagined 15 years ago. Twitter is something nobody imagined 5 or 10 years ago. The juice is alive in the American system, but it's a juice that is predicated on individual creativity, people coming out of nowhere like Mark Zuckerberg, mm-hmm. but it's also based on a certain amount of government infrastructure. There's this thing called the Internet that was put together by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. And without DARPA, we wouldn't have Facebook, we wouldn't have Twitter, and we wouldn't have Google.
And so we wouldn't have the NSA spying on us.
And we wouldn't have the NSA spying, because every good thing in overdose is a poison. It's a matter of balance, and we're losing our sense of balance, and we're becoming, right now, we are separating ourselves, putting ourselves at opposite ends of extremes, unwilling to talk to each other, and that's not a great thing. But on the whole, is America doing extraordinarily well? Look at the new industries we just talked about. They are extraordinary, and they've given you and me powers no human in the history, literally, of the universe no human had until the last 20 years.
Let's take some calls here with you, Howard. Don is in Salem, Oregon. Let's get us going here, Don, west of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
Hi, Don.
Yeah, I moved into my neighborhood about 10 years ago. Tom and I have had conversations about this screwy neighborhood, but after about 2 years, they're not Democrats or Republicans. The age group is mid-20s to 80s, but I'd like to call it the CSS, Common Sense Syndrome. And instead of me talking to them about this stuff, they're coming over and talking to me now. So they're starting to wake up, and they're really getting antsy, and they're standing up for themselves. And that is a very good thing. I thank you for your time, guys.
Very good. Interesting comments.
That's a very important point. You know, we have these brittle cliches. We have brittle cliches on the left, and we have brittle cliches on the right. It's been trying to transcend them for a long time. Most of these cliches started back in the days of the Roosevelt administration. Well, that's 80 years ago already. It's time for us to get beyond them.
Well, but can we?
Yes, we can. With some creative thinking, we can. With what Don called common sense, we certainly can. We have to put some pressure on our representatives to behave a little bit more rationally and with a little bit, there's this old word, comedy, getting along together. And it's often been said that once upon a time, the Republicans and Democrats used to have lunch together, dinner together, go to parties together. and they were able to work out problems together. And the example is often brought up of Tip O'Neill and his relationship with Ronald Reagan. And the two of them worked problems out together because they were forced to spend their time together in Washington. Well, then jet planes became common, and the rules of Congress and the Senate were changed to allow senators and congressmen to go back home. Now, to go back home 3 days a week. Theoretically, this should have brought them closer to the people they represented, but in fact, it took them further apart from each other. They no longer did the dinners, they no longer did the lunches, they no longer did the parties. Ideas came in like RINO, Republican in name only, the idea that if you made any compromise, you were a traitor. The comedy disappeared. Well, it's time to get the comedy, the simple human decency, the ability to communicate with each other and talk. It's time to get that back.
Howard, for some time now, I've been feeling, and a lot of listeners have been feeling, something impending. And every time something happens, like the Boston Marathon bombing or the massive shootings, I think, was this it? And then it kind of goes away, and I just don't feel as if that was it. That was the thing I was feeling. Are you feeling anything like that?
Things are pending, but you've got to remember there's this incredible two paragraphs at the beginning of A Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens. And you know the opening line. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the time of hope. It was the time of despair. And if you read the whole thing, it reads like it was written today as an editorial or was written tonight as an editorial for tomorrow's papers. So it always feels as if the deluge is about to come. It always feels as if catastrophe is just around the corner. And in fact, there are catastrophes. You know, that the Al-Qaeda affiliates are taking over all across northern Africa. That's where what our attack in Somalia was all about over the weekend. That's what our grabbing a guy off the streets, an Al-Qaeda person off the streets of Libya, was all about over the weekend. Now, you've got to give Barack Obama credit. You know that I have really reamed him.
I know, but the Somalia one didn't work.
Well, the one in Somalia didn't work, but it did. First of all, the one in Libya worked. Secondly, the one in Somalia puts al-Shabaab on notice. It tells them you're vulnerable at any moment. And when you give people a feeling that they are pinned down, their freedom to act diminishes.
Yeah, but they could do the same thing, Howard. You know, they could start infiltrating, as I think they have, from Mexico right into this country.
And they're infiltrating. We know they're infiltrating because in the Kenyan shopping mall extravaganza, there were American participants. These were American participants from somewhere in the Midwest, roughly Minnesota, and they are of Somalian descent. The kids who pulled off the Boston Marathon bombing, these are kids of Chechen descent. Now look, there are a lot of people of Chechen and Somalian descent who are wonderful, absolutely wonderful citizens, and in a sense more American than you and I, because they appreciate the freedoms that we've got more than you and I might. But we do have plants here, and we've had deliberate attempts to cultivate those plants for a long time. So yes, an attack can take place at any moment. There's been a world war between militant Islam and the rest of the world for nearly 1,400 years now. And there's the struggle between the United States and China for supremacy in the world, for supremacy in Southeast Asia. But these are normal. And in fact, we are experiencing a period of peace by comparison with most other periods in world history. That's absolutely remarkable. It's just we have to remember that eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
Okay, let's
eternal
go to
vigilance,
first.
Vigilance and another thing, eternal exuberance, the ability to creatively contribute to the lives of our fellow human beings.
First-time caller, Howard. Steve is in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi there, Stephen. You with us? Well, first-time caller does not know he has to talk right away. Brandon is in West Virginia. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good to have you.
Hi,
with
Brandon.
Us.
Hey, you guys earlier, you know, you were talking about, you know, how like sitting at dinner and you see like friends together and whatnot, and everybody's on their phone,
yeah.
Everybody's talking to each other and all that. Yeah, I think I agree a lot that like we do need to start communicating a lot more with each other, because like I read a lot of like what you would maybe call conspiracy things and whatnot. And, you know, I find it entertaining. And most of it's actually almost kind of believable, especially when you see a lot of it in movies and it looks real.
Sure.
You know, like, I think, like, not only, you know, are we, like, kind of growing apart, like, just, like, communicating-wise, but spiritually we're moving away almost from, like, human being, I think, sometimes. Because, like, for example, like, DARPA, you know, they started the internet and all that. And, you know, without them, there wouldn't be Facebook and Twitter and all that, like you were saying. But they also do a lot of other things. Like, I was reading articles, like, and seeing pictures of, like, how DARPA can, like, use, like, energy frequencies and whatnot to make squids and stuff, like, change color command. Like, so, like, we're, like, we know, we modify a lot of food. And, like, I think sometimes we're getting too far ahead with all this stuff. And I don't know. What do you think about all that?
Well, technology just does go sometimes too far, Howard.
It's called judgment. We've been doing gene modification, genetic engineering, for 10,000 years. We took these poor, innocent grasses, and we goosed their genes. We reworked their genes ferociously, and we turned one into wheat, and we turned another one into corn. Well, that's roughly 9,000 years ago in the case of wheat, and roughly 7,000 years ago in the case of corn. You have to have judgment. You have to look out. You have to know that you have to watch out for the harm that you could do. And you have to do that with any technology that you develop. I mean, remember what was being said only 5 years ago or 6 years ago about all this use of cell phones, that the electromagnetic waves being so close to our head would destroy all of our brains. Well, apparently, I don't think it's doing that.
It might be.
What's going on in Washington, it might be.
Now we're getting a lot of brain tumors these days, Howard.
That, and, you know, I haven't looked into the statistics on that, but there is this figure that's very interesting. And your producer, Lisa Lyons, who's been wonderful to me over the years, brought it up. And that is the fact that a new study demonstrates that women without a high school education are going down in their health. The health, the longevity of all the rest of us are going up in the United States.
They're dying younger than their mothers, aren't they?
That's 5 years younger than their mothers. That is a huge loss in a world where longevity is going up all over the place and where it's going up in Japan and Europe even faster than it's going up in the United States. But the problem is they don't have a high school education. They're living in the South and they're living in parts of the West. And those, if you do an overlay, you know, I did this thing that was absolutely shocking, and we did it in one of our 2-minute appearances over the course of the last 10 days. And I thought that the increase from 5.1% of the gross domestic product to 17.9% of the gross domestic product going into health expenditures, which is frightening and could destroy our economy, that was systemic, that it was taking place under both Republicans and Democrats. And then I found out that under Republican presidents, the percentage of money that's going into health care has gone skyrocketed, especially under Reagan and under George W. Bush. And under Democratic presidents, and this shocked me, even though you know I'm a registered Democrat, that under Democrats, it's leveled off. Well, I did, just before we went on the air, I took the map that showed where women without high school education are losing out in longevity, where they're losing 5 years of their lives. And I did an overlay of the map of the presidential election of 2012,
right,
in which states voted Republican and which states voted Democratic.
What did you find?
It's a match. It's not perfect, but it is a match. And there's an easy thing to understand. The Republican states are tending to take money out of education. They're tending to take money out of what we would think of as welfare programs. They're tending to take money out of the support programs, food stamps, that support these women. Now, look, no one who doesn't make a contribution to society and who's capable of making a contribution should be allowed to get away without making that contribution. We all owe it. It's what makes the society fruitful. It's what produces a cornucopia in our society. People who are deliberately goofing off should not be allowed. It's not that they shouldn't be allowed to do that. They certainly shouldn't be encouraged. But people who don't have a high school education should be encouraged to get more education. They should be given every help possible to turn them into productive members of society. And if you do that, the big health problems turn out to be not just government policies. they turn out to be personal policies. These women are suffering from obesity. That's a personal problem. They are suffering from diet problems. That's a problem.
Well, they're probably eating fast foods, Howard.
They're eating fast foods, but they're smoking cigarettes, they're drinking alcohol, and they're using illegal drugs. In other words, there are elements of self-control that you and I owe both to ourselves and to society. They're also not getting exercise, George. That's one of the most critical things you could do.
Absolutely.
You need to go out there and walk 2 miles a day.
Yep.
And you cannot be a prisoner of your car. You can't take the car to go down to the grocery store half a mile away. You have to walk there, for God's sakes. You owe it to both yourself and you owe it to the society that's paying for your medical expenses. So these are problems that need to be solved. But your job and mine is to be part of the solution, not to be part of the problem.
Tom is in Riverside, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
You're
and
welcome,
I wanted to say a couple things about this health care thing.
Sure.
Now, at this point, I think with what's in the balance, the president needs to step down from his position on health care. The American people have made it very, very, very clear that they don't want no part of the health care bill. On the other side of the equation, you've got the deficit is everybody knows. Even a small kid knows at 10 years old, knows that he can't keep spending and spending and spending. We always seem to have money for drones, 30,000 by the end of this decade. Are you kidding? Do you want a drone over your grandkid, following him where he goes?
I don't want a drone over me either.
This is America.
Tom, you will disagree with this quite violently, but I think that the obsession with our debt is misplaced. It's very badly misplaced. There's a whole set of nations that have obsessed on their debt, and as a consequence have, since 2008, when we had our great crash, have instituted policies of austerity. And none of those countries is recovering very fast from this great recession at all. They are struggling, every single one of them. Those are the countries of Europe, including England. The United States, which has not had an austerity policy, which has put tremendous amounts of money into stimulus and did it under George W. Bush. It's where the stimulus packages started. I think he was wise. The United States has been recovering twice as fast as Europe. Austerity, which means the focus on a debt, is wrong. Let's focus on the money that's in the pockets of big corporations, because the big corporations are cash rich, very cash rich right now. And let's focus on the wow factor. The wow factor is what Steve Jobs knew how to build better than anybody else in the recent history of America. Producing products that provide us with such new and amazing powers that we cannot resist them. And what happened with Steve Jobs' products, the iPhone, the iPad, was they were so irresistible that even in the from 2008 to 2012, the period of the Great Recession, the period of the greatest economic crisis since the 1930s. Even then, Apple grew and grew and grew, and it became the world's most valuable corporation, exceeding Exxon, of all things, in value. Why? Because of the wow factor, because it produced things that were so stunningly mouthwatering that people could not resist them. And that's the path out of a recession, not solving the debt problem. Not being grim and austere and cutting things off, growing things as Steve Jobs grew things. That's the way into the next paradise.
Howard, until next time, my friend, keep in touch with us, okay?
George, a huge thanks. Have a great night.
Howard Bloom, websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, ancient mysteries and doomsday theories on Coast to Coast AM.